720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. I appreciate you sharing part of your weekend with me. Sitting here on Michigan Avenue watching people walk by, not a jacket in sight. It's very, very exciting because it's sunny and it's beautiful outside and people are smiling. It's lovely. I hope you're able to get outside and enjoy some of that weather at some point today. So lots to do on the show today. A little bit later, we're going to be taking a look at Memorial Day numbers. Just how much stuff do we consume in terms of Memorial Day kind of food, picnic kind of stuff, and say adult beverages. How much are we drinking and eating during Memorial Day? We're going to take a look at that a little bit later. And also kind of an interesting, very modern problem that's hit a furniture retailer. We're going to be taking a look at that. But before we do that, we're joined by Ryan Ory, Chicago Tribune columnist, covering commercial real estate. Because, you know, Ryan, welcome to the program. Here's the thing. We have a bunch of people here in Chicago that just stopped saying Sears Tower and started saying Willis. And then we have a bunch of people that say just stopped saying Comiskey and got used to saying sell just in time for it to switch to guaranteed rate. And now there's yet another iconic landmark building here in Chicago that perhaps could change owners and names.
That's right. John Hancock Center is the owner of the it's an unusual building. It's owned by several different entities, but the owner of the office space and parking garage has said it's going to put that property on the market for sale later this year. And part of what you're acquiring is the naming rights and or the ability to sell the naming rights to a new company.
Oh, I really hope it's not a ridiculous, you know, ridiculous brand. I think for as much as I know the sell is happy to have guaranteed rate there as a sponsor, I'm sure. I think people are having trouble. It doesn't quite roll off the tongue the way Comiskey or sell, things like that. So I think it would be another thing for Chicagoans to have to get used to call the Hancock something totally different. So what is the price tag on that? If you as we're looking at the idea of putting the Hancock on the market, what is that the value of that property?
So the actual the property itself that's going on the market for sale, the seller Hearn Company based here in Chicago estimated that it should sell for about they believe it should sell for about $330 million or so, and then you know, part of that value is the ability to sell the naming rights, and they would not say what they believe those are worth, but the few sort of expert opinions I've gotten estimate it would be between $1 million and $2 million a year. So relative to the price tag of the entire property, not huge, but
sure.
Multiply that over a 10 or 15 year agreement, you could be talking, you know, $20 or $30 million on the high end. So.
And you said this is looking later in the year. That's when we should expect to hear more about this.
Yeah, I think they said by sometime like late summer they expect to actually formally put it on the market. They're in the process of interviewing brokers that would actually conduct the process. And this is often kind of a slow period in real estate. People's kids are getting out of school for the year and people are traveling, and sometimes you just see kind of a slowdown in big properties going on the market.
Sure.
During the summer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you have any indication of why they want to sell it all right now?
The group, Hearn Company, like a lot of real estate investors, their model is to find a property they think is undervalued or needs some work or needs a lot of leasing or whatnot. And so they bought this property for $140 million about 3.5 years ago. They've done a lot of new leases. They've made a lot of physical changes to the building. They've invested a lot in the building. And now, they have a chance to sell it for more than double what they bought it for. And again, there's a lot of other costs they put into the building, so it's not like they're going to double their money. But they have a chance to make a significant amount of money, and a lot of these investors just over a 3 or 4 or 5 year period, this is what they do. They buy, improve, and sell.
Yeah. I mean, if you buy for $140 million and you think you can get $330 million, why would you not? Why would you not?
Right.
We're talking with...
Right. And I think another reason why would they look to sell is in the last 2 or 3 years has been a very strong market for selling buildings. And it wasn't as strong when they bought it. And so timing is part of it too.
Sure. Sure, certainly. We're talking with Ryan Ory, Chicago Tribune columnist covering commercial real estate. And Ryan, you've also recently written about the $1 billion 6-year Union Station revamp. Catch us up on all that's going on with that.
Yeah, so Amtrak and other entities that were running this process had chosen 4 finalists to submit proposals on a redevelopment of the actual Union Station, the actual rail station is in the building, as well as other property nearby and air rights, you know, the ability to build directly over train tracks, basically. And so they had the 4 finalists, and they just chose a Chicago group, Riverside Investment and Development, and it has some other partners as well, but they basically chose the winning proposal, and Riverside wants to build, either convert existing unused space in the building or build new space that would total more than 3 million square feet of new space. And that would be a variety of things, a lot of new retail, office space, apartments, hotel. They're also in the process going to try to improve the traffic flow just going through the actual train station, which they think has a lot of choke points and is not that efficient. And so that's where they are. They've announced this plan, and now they've got to try to pull it off. It's a very ambitious plan.
Sure. Well, I think the traffic alone would do wonders. If anyone who's ever tried to just cross the hallway at Union Station during rush hour is not, they know it's not an easy task. I mean, there's so many people, you literally cannot just walk across to Starbucks or whatever you want to do. It's so congested in there. So I think that alone would be a big improvement. But it's interesting to think of that as being kind of a destination for an entertainment area, like with hotels and restaurants and shops and that kind of thing. I'm kind of envisioning kind of what happened to Block 37 down on State.
Yeah, I think, this is the area that it's in, and the building itself has for a long time been kind of an area where you would kind of only go there for one reason. You were coming in or out on a train, and you'd kind of quickly come in and come out and go where you're going. And there wasn't a lot of other reason to go there. But there's been a lot of other, new developments happening in that vicinity. And, there's been a lot of movement kind of west of the immediate downtown in terms of new development. And they believe now there will be demand for all of these different things. And they also are just trying to make the building have something that would make someone, instead of walking past the building or quickly exiting the building, have a reason to stay.
Sure.
And that's going to be the challenge, because it does have sort of a fortress-like feel. The immediate area around it doesn't have a lot of enticing things to make you want to stay around there, and they're trying to create that by having people who live there or stay there in a hotel, work there. They want to put a food hall in the building and other retail, so they're trying to make it, rather than something you try to quickly get in and out of, someplace you want to be.
Yeah. Somewhere you want to hang out for a bit. So it's a 6-year project, they're estimating, and a $1 billion price tag on that. When is that scheduled to begin?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, I think the $1 billion, they said more than $1 billion. I think that's a conservative estimate, and that just shows you what an ambitious project it is. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be done over several phases because of how complex and large it is, and that helps with trying to finance the project and other things. But they said they'll take close to a year probably to finalize the actual plans and come to an agreement on exactly what they want to do, and then they'll start in about a year, and then from that point, that would be 6 years going forward in multiple phases. So it's not going to be a quick project, and that's what makes this kind of thing tough to pull off and potentially risky, because who knows what happens in the next 6 or 7 years with the economy or the real estate market or just general,
right,
you know, whatever else could happen to Chicago or the national economy or whatever. So there's a reason that, you know, previous attempts to do something like this there has failed, but there's also a huge potential upside if they pull it off and do it right.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we will keep turning to you for updates as it begins to unfold. Ryan Ory, Chicago Tribune columnist, covering all the things commercial real estate. Thanks so much for being with us today.
No problem.
Thank you so much. All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, plenty more to talk about here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks so much for being with us today and spending part of your Saturday with us. We are most grateful to you for that, especially given how gorgeous it is outside. I hope you're enjoying some of the sunshine. I know lots of smiling people on Michigan Avenue look like they're enjoying the sunshine for sure, and I'm awful glad to see that. So, you know, Memorial Day weekend is upon us, and so all the big sales are happening. I know there's lots of shoppers out doing that kind of thing. And there was a story that caught my eye in Washington Post that I thought was really interesting. And the headline is this: Pottery Barn's big problem, your tiny apartment. And it's really all about how, as housing, you know, there's more of a crunch on housing, particularly millennial shoppers are setting up house in their adulthood, right? Entering adulthood and doing so. You know, you can't necessarily just shell out for a big old couch back in like you could maybe in the day. So they're targeting younger shoppers with smaller pieces of furniture. But it's really kind of an interesting piece because it's about the risk there. They're looking at the example of Coach handbags. Like when they went chasing after consumer dollars, suddenly the kind of the sheen of luxury went away from the brand a little bit as they start entering like outlet malls and things like that, which is a really interesting thing. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Pottery Barn chasing kind of a lower price point, a shopper maybe who has a little bit less money, who's maybe super saddled by tons of student debt, something like that. So we'll be looking at that. But in the piece, it's also talking about other kind of threats to the Pottery Barn business. And one of them is things like TJ Maxx, who said they want to get into the furniture game. And Amazon even is doing a little bit of furniture. Here's the thing. I must confess something. And that is this. I have purchased a piece of furniture off of Amazon. I purchased like a little love seat sort of situation, Griffin.
Okay.
It was not a move I would repeat.
What happened? Why?
Well, it was of very poor or reeking quality, let's say. It was just like a piece of junk. and because I think that's the thing with furniture. You want to touch it and make sure you want to plop down on that couch and make sure it's like worth your dime, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And I got that and I was like, oh no, this is not going to work. And I don't think I'm a snob about furniture, but I was just like, oh no.
So what did you do? Did you send it back?
Well, I could not return it. So I had to Craigslist that bad boy. That's okay. That's all right.
That's the beauty of a place like Pottery Barn, I suppose.
Didn't need that furniture anyway. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. There's certain kinds of retailers that I think it's hard to replace. And I think furniture is one of those things. You want to try it out. You want to mess with it and open the drawers of a table or a chest or something. So
it's a wonder. This article cites that it was had very little financial trouble until the last four quarters, and they've seen four consecutive decreases in sales. But until then, they were doing really well. So I don't know if Amazon is even the culprit there.
No. We've talked about that a lot on the show, right? Like how brick and mortar establishments suffer due to online retail.
But I don't think that's what this is. And it's funny that they cite this sister brand that's also under the Williams-Sonoma umbrella called West Elm that has had huge sales in the past quarter.
Well, it's a little, you know, it's got a very different vibe, the West Elm.
Right, it shows that it's not really about the furniture. It's about how people perceive it.
This
cites that studies say that millennials or a lot of different people, I think, but view Pottery Barn as a luxury or just automatically assume that they can't afford to go there and will look elsewhere, even if they're maybe going to find comparable prices. I don't know.
See, I just believe I can't afford to go anywhere and everything works out.
You're sleeping on the ground.
Right. I can afford none of this. We're good. So that's how I function. I also think, too, I mean, more and more we get into that sort of Etsy mindset, right, where people want to find like a thrift or vintage find, something kind of unique and cool for their house. They don't want the same couch that like their neighbor does. I think people want uniqueness and special. And I think there's pride in saying, oh, I found this piece of junk table and painted it, and now it's this cool, unique thing.
That's true.
I think there's that too. And but it is interesting that it's unique just to Pottery Barn.
And in thinking about it, it's like there must be a step in between Pottery Barn and IKEA. Like, you know, you go to college or in your first apartments, you're furnishing with IKEA stuff probably. I still kind of am. And then Pottery Barn does seem a little too much for me. I don't need a big giant dining table or something like that. I don't have room for it and I wouldn't have a use for it. But somewhere in between there is probably what people are looking for, and that's where they're losing out.
It seems like kind of an investment piece. Like, you're not going to buy an investment
thing
from IKEA. You're going to buy this couch that works well for a rental.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to invest in furniture when you probably like own a place or something like that, or couple up or both or whatever.
Yeah. So, well, they're hurting.
Also, do you smell burning right now? It smells like fire here in the studio.
we need to take a break.
We're going to take a break, get you to news, all that good stuff, and figure out the source of that fire. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. I appreciate you for sharing part of your Saturday, as ever. So, Memorial Day weekend is upon us, and it, of course, is a day of remembrance, or a weekend of remembrance, but it is also lots of business numbers to look at. There are big sales happening, there's lots of travel happening, and there's a lot of people gathering and eating and doing those kind of things. So let's take a look at some of those numbers. There's an analyst from Wallet Hub who did a big study on this, and you can find all this. NBC News has an interesting aggregation of all this data that's pretty good, lots of stuff in there. But 41.4% of Americans polled say that they are likely to take advantage of Memorial Day deals. And looking out the window, it looks like a lot of people shopping. I'm seeing a lot of shopping bags going by the window. So I think that's probably an accurate number there. But also, 39.3 million people say they plan to travel over the holiday weekend. 39.3 million, that's quite a lot. And it's a 2.7% increase over last year. And a little over 88% of travelers say that they will drive to their destination, which is also a little bit higher. It's about a 2.5% bump over last year. But air travel is also up about 5%, 2.9 million people expected to travel by plane. So if you are heading to O'Hare or Midway, may want to leave a little early. I can see some lines being long and tempers flaring, as people do in airports for sure. But also, this data points out that there's a lot of weddings and things like that that take place over Memorial Day, which, let's sidebar about that for a minute. You know, getting a day off is a tough thing. Getting a long weekend is difficult, and usually most people go, oh man, this came just at the right time, if they work in a field where they get like a long weekend. I mean, I'm not telling you when to have your wedding or bar mitzvah or whatever, but like, recognize that that's about you and you're asking people to sacrifice a beloved long weekend.
Interesting.
I get it. It's convenient because people are probably off and you don't have to like, oh, I can't go to your wedding in wherever because I don't have vacation. I get that.
I could see appreciating it. Yeah.
Right.
But
also like, especially when it's like I know someone that got married on Thanksgiving. What are you doing to me?
Whoa.
Come on.
That's a power move. That's crazy.
That's a power move. You're asking me to go.
I kind of like that.
Sit in a banquet hall on Thanksgiving. Right. It was a little convenient. Oh, sorry, family. Can't fight about politics with you. Got to go do a thing.
Interesting.
At a wedding. Yeah. But Griffin, would you care to guess Labor Day, from Memorial Day through Labor Day, the span of the summer as we acknowledge it, how many total hot dogs are consumed in this country?
For the whole summer.
The whole summer.
Gosh, I don't know. Enough. Plenty.
Done. Good enough. Yes.
It's got to be something crazy. I'll say 500 million.
More than that.
Oh.
It is 7 billion total.
Billion.
Wait for it. At a rate, this seems unbelievable to me, but nonetheless, 818 per second.
So
what? So Kobayashi, the champion eater that has won the mm-hmm. Nathan's hot dog eating contest,
sure,
like
yeah.
it's an we become a nation of that, right? Of this, like, we're scarfing hot dogs
can
at
we
a rate.
Just have a second of silence and just think about the 818.
The hot dogs that had to die for us? What are you saying?
Just imagine right now in that silence.
1,000 hot dogs were just eaten. Right. That's crazy to think of that number. But then we also have to look, as we're looking at travel, as we're looking at that kind of thing too, let's go serious for a minute, because there's also anytime we have those, anytime we have a celebration, anytime we have like a holiday, the rates for alcohol-related fatalities on the highways go way, way up. That's a big issue that I talk about a lot. It's personal to me. I lost a family member to a drunk driver, so I do not even joke about that one. But please, please, you know what? Drink all you want. Just make a plan before you go out. Don't be tempting fate on that one. And don't, let's just make sure, let's just let everybody get home safely. Truly, it's a really big deal. And the numbers go way, way up, really. So about 32% of the nation's major roads are listed as poor condition. So you got that working against you already. About 50,000, a little over 50,000 injuries will be caused by car accidents. And of that 50,000, almost 440 will be fatalities. Of that 440, 44% will involve alcohol. So let's get that number down this year. Pretty please. Do what you want. Drink all you want. Just make a plan. Just crash on someone's couch. Sleep in the bushes. I don't care. It's all good. It'll make a good story later. But lots of interesting numbers to look at around Memorial Day, both the travel part, the food part, all the parts, the retail. It'll be interesting to see the retail numbers from this weekend. We'll take a look at that next weekend and see how it looked. But consumer confidence is pretty high right now, so I would imagine it will be a fairly lucrative weekend for retailers, despite what we were just talking about a moment ago earlier on the show before news about how some furniture retailers are kind of feeling the squeeze on that. What is your Memorial Day plan, Griffin? You doing fun things?
I believe I'll be working.
Same.
Not so fun.
It's fun here. Oh, your other job.
Well, either way.
All the jobs.
I love it all.
Yeah,
and
same.
I can't wait. No, I'll be working. It's nice to be downtown at this time. It's busy. It's hopping.
Yeah, it's
weather's
hopping.
Nice right now.
Indeed.
Knock
yeah.
on wood.
Right, right. Unlike yesterday, that was kind of yuck. Yeah, so I too will be here. So solidarity. Bob Kessler, what about you? Memorial Day plans?
I'll be working too. I'm here till 6.
So maybe we should.
Tomorrow too. Tomorrow
maybe
afternoon.
We should have like an employee Memorial Day cookout.
Hot dog eating contest.
Hot dog eating contest.
Krista made fudge, our engineer on duty. It's really good too.
There you go.
Right. Oreo fudge. That's your thing. To counterbalance the hot dogs.
I don't know if that's my thing. I don't know that I've ever had any such yeah. thing like that in my life.
You know, last week my dad and I were in Door County,
beautiful.
Where the Bailey's Harbor Yacht Club is.
Sure it is.
We had the run of the place, though.
Really?
Every restaurant we went to, there was maybe one other table. You know, everywhere we went, we were pulled into a place. We were doing photography, you know. We were the only people at Cave Point Park, you know.
Wow.
Practically. The only people.
Do you think
we saw very... Now, this weekend, it'll be much different.
I was going to say, do you think yeah. people were just waiting?
They were just waiting.
So they could go
yeah.
this weekend?
It was great to have the run of the place, though. It was really nice.
I bet.
They have a beautiful place to have the run of.
Wow, that's my introvert yeah. dream, to just have a place to myself.
I have been there mostly in the, quote, lower seasons for travel, and it's so different. It really... never. I mean, it's not like the city. It doesn't get crowded. I mean, people talk, oh, the traffic's going to be crazy this week. It's not crazy the way you and I know of crazy in the city, but it's nice to be there when there's not a lot of people.
Door County traffic
yeah.
is like, there might be 3 or 4 cars ahead of you.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe a little pokey.
Right, sure. You have to wait an extra minute. Yeah.
Something.
That's nice. That has its appeal. That sounds
sure
pretty
does.
Good. Nice, relaxing kind of thing. Well, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll keep taking a look at some numbers around food, around adult beverages, and that kind of thing. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've been talking about some numbers around Memorial Day, and we came across this staggering number that between Memorial Day and Labor Day, Americans eat 7 billion hot dogs, averaging 818 per second. That seems totally not plausible to me, but nonetheless, the numbers don't lie. So there's that. There's also some other interesting headlines around food that I also want to take a look at. One of them is a piece that's in Washington Post right now that just went up this week about how, a couple of months ago, there was maybe even 7 or 8 months ago, there was a conversation we talked about a little bit on this show, how suddenly bacon is on everything. And there were some fears of a bacon shortage. Well, there's not really fear. There's not really danger of a shortage per se, but suppliers are rising to meet this unbelievable demand on pork and bacon products because it's in so much stuff. Suddenly Americans are eating more food, more pork based product than ever before, up 20%. So that is very, very significant. There is a $20 million facility that's being created about an hour south of Des Moines, Iowa, open just to meet the demand of how many pork products Americans are eating right now. I think it is because we put bacon on everything.
Yeah, but I kind of thought the bacon trend was over.
I thought so too. I thought we had moved on to stuff, but I mean, it's still on like donuts. It's still on everything.
Yeah, most of the it looks like 4 billion pounds more being produced per year than were in 2014. That's a significant
number.
It's huge in a very short amount of time.
And I've had Bloody Marys where they put the bacon.
Oh, we could do a whole show about the weird Bloody Marys that have like pizza. There's one with a whole pizza rolled up into like, it looks like an ice cream cone, shoved down into the Bloody Mary and has like a bouquet of bacon shooting out of it. That's... Just let's just have our hair of the dog in peace, please.
Most of that 4 billion pounds is coming from the bacon on donuts and Bloody Marys.
I
just
would not
one,
doubt that.
One strip at a time.
One strip at a time.
Yeah.
Well, there were the reason we kind of got on this thing about these market fears of a bacon shortage is because several months ago, demand was so high that the country's pork belly supply hit a 50-year low. Which, again, I like your Bloody Mary and donut theory here, Griffin. It's not a bad one.
I don't know if that's too tried and true. Don't quote me on that.
It is based on very scientific data that you came up with just 5 minutes ago. It's all good. But it's also showing up on a lot of restaurants, which I think that's kind of an interesting thing, too. You know, I mean, there's a lot of... There's not angst isn't the word, but you know, there's stuff around pork. There's plenty of people who do not eat pork as either ethical or religious practice. So it does show up on a lot of menus, and that could sometimes, you know, exclude some people, or you'd have to ask to have it not on there, things like that. But there's another piece, and it's at CNN, and it's also taking a look at some of these food numbers that I think are so interesting. They're way, way up. My theory, if I just had to take a shot in the dark here, is maybe people are kind of eating their feelings right now or something. I don't know. Something's up because not the healthiest food in the world is those brands are doing extremely well. The stock market generally is doing pretty well at the moment, but McDonald's stock, all-time high. Burger King doing very well. It hit a new record on Friday. The company, that parent company is Restaurant Brands. It's QSR on the stock market. They also own Tim Hortons and recently bought Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, up very, very high. KFC, which is owned by Yum Brands. They also own Taco Bell and Pizza Hut. Another all-time high with them. So I think what do you think that is? Are we busy? Are we just hitting the drive-thrus? I don't know, but it's not just food. We're also drinking a little bit more than usual. So if we look at Anheuser-Busch InBev, up 12% this year, Corona Parent, which is Constellation Brands, it has surged nearly 20%, and Jack Daniel's maker Brown-Forman is up 15%. So we're drunk and we're eating poorly is what's going on right now. That's what the stock market is telling us about our consumer behavior. We're not buying furniture.
Stress, yeah.
I think it is. I think a lot of people are stressed. There's a lot of contentious political debate happening in our country right now, and I think people are stressed out, and so they're drunk and eating badly. That's what's happening.
That might be true. Back to the pork story. They attributed a lot of that rise to people going out to restaurants eating more, and pork is more prominently featured on restaurant menus than you might find it in your own home.
Absolutely. Yeah. I kind of started to go down that path, and it's like you see it on so many things. It's even just kind of on top of stuff. Like you can just order a garden salad, but there's like, it's served in a bacon cup. or something, you know. And anyone who uses Pinterest, there's lots of recipes. Like, you can line a muffin tin with bacon and then crack eggs into it, and you have this like portable breakfast, allegedly. Like, I feel like, yes, there's a lot of bacon being used in stuff.
Well, and it also, they cited a more scientific theory than mine would have been that pork is a popular meat in Latino cooking, mm-hmm. and sales have grown with that population and the rise of more popular establishments like that and chain.
Your phone is ringing off the hook.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's all good. You're a popular guy. Lots of things to discuss. But as we had looked at all these numbers and all this, all the food data and how we're basically how the stock market is telling us that we're drunk and eating poorly. That is also, if we're looking at non-alcoholic beverages, Pepsi also new all-time high. Other carbonated beverages National Beverage, which they make Shasta and LaCroix Seltzer. Also, that one is up. Coca-Cola stock is up 10% this year and is not far from a record. But as a result from all of that, also, Nutrisystem is up more than 40% this year, while its rival Weight Watchers, it has more than doubled its stock price. So that's fascinating. So we're eating badly, we're maybe drinking a little more, but then we're repenting at Weight Watchers and Nutrisystem. So there's a look at those numbers. And of course, as we said earlier, we're also eating 818 hot dogs per second between Memorial Day and Labor Day. Griffin, I can't get over that number. That just seems so implausible to me. I'm not questioning the data as reported by NBC, but
I don't know.
That one I'm stuck with just because it's Memorial Day. So people are thinking about that kind of stuff.
That's what my phone ringing was. People just, it can't be true.
People calling in dismay. That's what it was. Definitely, that's what it was. Well, we are going to take a break here in just a bit and get things wrapped up. Turn things over to our friend Scott Catoon for the show. I can't even get that out of my mouth today. The Startup Showcase. And he's, I'm sure, got many entrepreneurs happening, doing interesting things in Chicago that you will want to stick around for. So we are going to take a little break, get to all that. And then I will see you later tonight, 7 to 9 for the Saturday night special. And on Monday, 7 to 9, I'll be in for Justin Kaufman with our good friend Rex Hupke, Chicago Tribune columnist. So we shall catch you then. So we'll be right back here in just a bit on 720 WGN.